To approve the minutes of the last meeting, and the last meeting of the council was the one that was held in Montreal.
Bruce, sorry, this is Amadeu. I don't know how you manage that normally, but shouldn't we just have a roll call just announcing who's on the phone, please?
We can certainly do that. I've been jotting down people as they've come on, but I can certainly do that, yes. I'll just go through the list, and those that are on the call, please say yes. I have in the commercial and business users, Philip Shepherd.
Yes.
Marilyn Cade.
I'm back.
Grant Forsyth.
Good evening.
Jeff Newman.
Yep.
Kerry Carp.
Yes.
Jordan Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Harris. Tony Holmes.
He's absent and he's given his proxy to Tony Harris or to Greg.
Greg Ruth. Okay, Un Chun.
He will probably be absent too and he's given his proxy to Milton Miller.
Milton Miller.
Hi, Greg Root joining.
Thank you, Greg. Milton Mueller.
I'm here.
Yes. Gabrielle Panera. Ken Stubbs.
Here.
Tom Keller.
I'm here.
Bruce Tonkin, I'm here. Lawrence Jolikin. Ellen Shankman.
Ellen is absent and she's given her proxy to Laurence or Linda.
Okay. Linda Roche.
Here.
Amadeo.
Yeah.
Demi Getschko. Alec Wilson.
Present.
Audrey Gagliazzo.
He is not present, Bruce, and he asked whether Christian Vihat could be in his place, but we haven't heard Christian on the phone yet.
Okay. Christian, you're not on the call? And Thomas Rossler. Thomas, are you on the call? Thomas Rossler?
Yes, of course. Sorry.
Yep. Thank you. So with regard to the minutes of the last meeting, was held in Montreal.
I'm happy to move to adopt those minutes. Before I do that, also just
are you just breaking up there, Philip?
I heard Philip say he moved to adopt the call, but he had a caveat there. Also, I heard Demi Getschko checking in as
yes,
well.
Yes, Demi, I noticed that as well. Demi has joined the call.
Sounds like Philip got knocked off his cell. I'll go ahead and move for adoption of the minutes if Philip comes back in. Bruce.
Do I have a second for that? Marilyn, do you want to second the...
I'd like to know what Philip's concern is. Is that him joining back in? In the interest of moving ahead, Philip. In the interest of moving ahead, Bruce, I will second the minutes.
Okay. All those in favour of accepting the minutes, say aye.
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 And any against? Any abstentions?
I'm an L abstention because I wasn't a part of the council yet.
That's true. Thank you, Amadeo. Okay, the minutes are passed. Matters arising from the minutes of the last meeting, there was the matter regarding the President's Working Group on WIPO 2, and I'll address that in item 3 of the agenda. There was also a request for me to liaise with the President of ICANN regarding communication with the Board. I haven't directly discussed this with the President, but I have posted to the Council as a suggestion that we aim to perhaps meet quarterly with the Board in a joint conference, a teleconference format to both brief the Board on policy work currently undertaken and also to address any issues in regard to processes and procedures between the Board and the Council. And item 6 is one of those issues that we'll be discussing today.
Laurence Jolacquian.
Sorry, who, that was Laurence, was it?
Oh, yes. Bruce, it's Laurence. I just joined the call.
Thank you, Laurence.
I'm sorry to be late.
That's okay. And the final item arising from the minutes was a discussion regarding problems with introducing new TLDs that was raised by Jeff Newman, and I'll place that for discussion under other business in item 8 for the agenda for today. So moving on to the third item of the agenda, which is the President's Working Group on WIPO 2. I have spoken to the ICANN President Paul Toomey earlier today, and he informs me that there will be approximately 6 members from the Government Advisory Committee on that working group, and the President has asked GNSO to nominate 6 people to join the President's Working Group on the WIPO 2 recommendations. So then it's up to the Council to decide how to choose those 6. My recommendation would probably be to have one nomination from each of the constituencies, which would make the 6, but I'm open to other suggestions. Would anyone like to speak to that item?
Well, that seems like a fair way to do it, Bruce.
Milton, I think one of the issues, speaking to Paul, I certainly know that I've personally been approached by a lot of intellectual property experts, you know, offering their services to join the committee, and I think what they want to avoid is to have a committee that's entirely you know, trademark experts, but a committee or working group that involves a wider cross-section of interests. And I think if we had one representative from each constituency from the GNSO, then we do have a fairly wide cross-section of interests from registries, registrars, providers, non-commercial users, business users.
Bruce,
and of course intellectual property.
Morning.
This is Jeff. I have a question if I can get in the queue.
Yes, go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. Just what exactly is the purpose of this group? Is it to implement the WIPO 2? Is it to make recommendations on whether we should implement the WIPO 2? Because, I mean, I've heard in various meetings that we've had strong opposition against going forward with any sort of implementation, even from intellectual property owners. So do you have an idea of the scope of this group?
I'm there on the queue.
And I'm in the queue.
And Ken Stubbs in the queue, please.
Okay. I might just go through the queue before answering that question, Jeff, because others may be able to handle it better than myself. So I had Amadeo, I had, I think, Ken, and I had Marilyn. So, Amadeo, you go first.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, regarding this, no, WIPO 2 recommendation working group is still not a working group to implement it. whether to raise the issues, that is, to see whether it can be implemented or not, in which conditions, and if yes, how, and if not, why not, and if yes or no, what are perhaps the legal and technical implications, more legal than technical this time, right? So it's simply the reception within the ICOM process of an external advice like Waikotu. We followed somehow the same process with the first set, with one difference. With the first set of WIPO recommendation, was clear that it was absolutely needed. It was clear consensus on the need of doing that, but the details of, you know, the balance between trademarks and rights and domain name owner's right was not quite clear. It was reworked somehow within ICANN. In this case, this group is to study the, you know, the basic question: what are the implications for ICANN and for the domain name systems of receiving and implementing this? And as you say, there is, I would say that your statement is quite polite. I would say that in my perception is a wide agreement that this should not go into UDRP or within ICANN processes at any rate. But indeed, we have the formal request, we have to deal with it. And my perception might be wrong.
Okay, can I follow up after the queue goes? Bruce?
This is Bruce Tonkin back on again. Some reason I got cut off there.
Oh, okay. Amadeo just finished, and then I've asked to be in the queue after everyone else goes.
Okay. So I guess the summary of what you're saying, from what I could gather from the starting part there, Amadeo, is that the working group is not yet is not looking at implementation. It's looking at how I guess.
It's a group to study the implications for ICANN from this external recommendation. Now we have this coming from GAC. It's a study run by WIPO making some recommendations. And now this is an ICANN group studying, you know, how, if, and what, in any case.
Okay. Ken Stubbs?
Actually, Marilyn was on the queue before me, so I'll defer to her and step in afterwards if it's okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Marilyn.
I just want to make I want to make two comments. First of all, I think it's very important to distinguish WIPO 1. WIPO 1 did not arise in the way that WIPO 2 did. WIPO 1 was a request for a fast-track study. There was extensive consultation that took place over 6 months, including a variety of regional meetings, broad participation in the development, and then a process within ICANN itself to determine what the outcome should be related to the UDRP. WIPO 2, I think, it came up in a very different way. I just want to make sure that we all distinguish that. I agree with the rest of Amadeo's interpretation, however, that this is about studying the implications of the recommendation that a WIPO process that was entirely within WIPO itself and did not include a broad external consultation. I do also think that this is a very important process that we are going to participate in, because, and I know everybody's going to take it as seriously as we need to, but I think Amadeo's interpretation of where we are in this is something that I would support, that we are studying the implications of the recommendation at this stage.
Okay, so we're studying the implications of the recommendation. I believe there, I was just trying to locate on the website, there was a formal ICANN board resolution to create the steering group, and I guess that's the only terms of reference that exist. I think it's about a paragraph, so I can certainly get a copy of that and forward it to the list to help constituencies identify an appropriate candidate, if that's what the council wishes to do. Ken, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, I think we need a clearer definition. In the last 5 minutes, I've heard the term steering group, working group, so forth and so on. So I think it's important for us to take a very close look at the board resolution there, number one. Number two, I agree completely with Amadeo's interpretation as he sees it of where we're going with this thing, and I think it's extremely important that we understand that at this point in time, not really involving herself, and if I'm wrong, correct me, we're not creating policy or anything of a nature like this. What we're trying to do is to assess the potential impact of the recommendations and determine whether or not the recommendations are something that we even need to deal with, and if we do, how do we deal with it? So I think it's very important we understand exactly what this group is trying to accomplish. Thank you.
Bruce, I might have something to say.
Yes, go ahead.
It's Milton.
I think I had Jeff was also in the queue. Do you want to go first, Jeff, or refer to Milton?
No, Milton can go first. Sorry.
Yep, go ahead, Milton.
Well, yeah, I want to follow up on Ken Stubbs' comments. I think the procedural issue here is interesting and difficult, perhaps more so than we're giving it credit for. Really, for the last 3 years, ICANN has had a tendency to, every time they're confronted with a policy issue, to invent a new method of handling it. And it would be very nice to have a stable and defined procedure for making policy. I see this as a similar case in which we're dealing basically de novo with the process. My understanding of what the process was supposed to be was that any domain name issue would have to initiate in the GNSO. Therefore, I'm a little bit confused about the status of this working group. And I second Ken's concerns about the label that we're using. Is it a steering group? Is it a working group? If it's a president's committee, then typically, like with international domain names, those have been study groups that have not had any policy component. So we might want to request that this thing, whatever it is, be relabeled as some kind of a study group. And secondly, since the GNSO seems to be unified on this question, and since, as I understand it, no actual policy could ever be made without going through the GNSO, we might want to just designate one member to this committee who represents the consensus of the group. I know that's a bit dangerous in some sense. We would all have to trust whoever this person was, but it seems to me that we pretty much agree on some of the issues here.
I would like also to speak to that. That's a Maleo.
And I'd like to get back in the queue.
Well, just a comment, I guess, from my discussions, Milton, on that as an option is I think part of the exercise is probably to explain the position that the council and why it has come to that position to perhaps the members of the GAC, and I think that's probably better put I think it would be stronger if it came from, say, six people coming from slightly different perspectives who are unified, rather than one person that's putting it with one particular point of view. So that's just a comment from a pure process side in terms of balance on that committee. I'm just losing track of the queue here a bit now. I had Marilyn, you...
Jeff, I'm there with Marilyn.
Yeah, I think I was first there.
That was Jordan, was it?
No, Jeff.
Jeff.
I thought it was Amadeo.
No, Jeff, Amadeo and Marilyn.
Thank you, actually.
I just I wanted to echo what, I guess, Milton said. I think it's very, extremely important because regardless of what the steering committee recommends, ultimately the only way these WIPO recommendations can be carried out is through the contracts. And the only way the contracts can be amended is by going through the formal consensus process, which means bottoms up, through the GNSO, and then to the board. And I think it's very important for the six members who go to this committee to basically reinforce that, because I don't think that's something that the GAC understands, or not that they don't necessarily understand. I don't think anyone's really explained that to them. And, one thing that I can say as a registry, no matter how good this steering committee or working group works together, and even if they do a study so that it can be implemented, and therefore it's a recommendation of the president to adopt it, as a registry, none of us are going to implement it, none of us are going to implement it, and therefore, no matter how good the policy is, it just won't go into effect. So I think one of the things that as a council we really need to stress Milton's point of going through the GNSO, and maybe it's more of an education than it is as strong as I made the point, but it's something that we've discussed on a number of occasions as registries, that everything that is a policy must go through that process. Otherwise, it's a voluntary participation. Even the redemption grace period was a great policy, but that's still a voluntary policy, and no registry actually has to implement it. Most of us have agreed to, but I'm not sure that the I'm not sure the WIPO recommendations would get that same support. The second question I have is on the committee. Are they requesting council members themselves, or is your proposal, Bruce, for council members to serve, or that each constituency can elect someone or appoint someone, whether or not they're on the council?
My proposal is purely that the GNSO Council has been asked to nominate six people to the working group. To my mind, there's no restriction on whether those people are council members or any other party. So my suggestion would be that the constituencies would be free to nominate their preferred person, and that there'd be no restriction on whether or not they're a council member. I'll just locate the text of the ICANN board resolution. I'll just read that out just to clarify the terminology. The board resolves that the president is directed to form, in consultation with the chairs of the GNSO Council, the ALAC and the GAC, a working group, including participants in the GNSO, the ALAC and the GAC, for the purpose of analysing the practical and technical aspects of implementing the WIPO recommendations, and notably the implications for the UDRP, and further resolved that the President and General Counsel are directed to investigate and analyse legal aspects of the relationship between ICANN's mission and the recommendations conveyed by the letter from WIPO, and that the working group, on the result of that investigation, or report to the working group, and that it's among topics to be considered should be whether implementation of the recommendations would require ICANN to prescribe adherence to normative rules not based on established laws for the resolution of competing third-party claims to rights to register names. So my interpretation of that, to answer some of the questions that people have asked, one is it's called a working group, it's a president's working group, and two, the first step seems to be that the General Counsel will be creating an analysis on whether it's within the ICANN mission, and also whether WIPO is actually asking ICANN to prescribe adherence to rules not based on established laws. So I think it sounds like there's quite a bit of work that would be done first before that working group would consider the results of that work.
Yeah, and Ms. Amadeo, regarding some of the questions here, first of all, I mean, your reading, Bruce, is correct. This is a working group that, you know, will do something like a map of the questions. One possible result of this working group is that the parties involved decide that this brings, you know, extremely difficult legal questions regarding ICANN and UDRP. Let me give you a concrete example, because this is what it's about. WIPO to request ICANN to create a mechanism for protection of things that do not have protection at national level, like geographic denominations, like trademarks. So ICANN may decide whatever we want about domain names, because we are supposed to know about it, to have some consensus mechanism to decide about it. Or we may refer to national legislation about something that exists, like trademarks. But here, it's, you know, a more intriguing thing. We are requested to protect things that are not protected at a national level, which is very complex and probably not very advisable, in my personal opinion. Therefore, a plausible outcome of this working group is, you know, deferring things from the legal point of view, from, you know, UDRP strict point of view, from the legal internal contractual point of view to other parties, and all this, Milton, before it ever comes to a PDP process, so before it comes to us as any concrete policy proposal. And it might never come, and this would be my personal preferred solution, but perhaps it comes, and then we will need to deal with it in the normal policy process. The second thing is, regarding all these things, I would advise not to follow Milton's advice to just send one person. Don't underestimate the pressure that's behind all this WIPO2 process. There will be lots of people there. Sending only one person will put him or her in a difficult position. It will show somehow either opposition or lack of willingness of cooperation from the genus or council. I don't think is the best position. And third, send whoever you want, but send also some people with a strong legal background on tremors and things like that, because they will need it.
Okay, thank you, Amadeus. Let's see, Marilyn, in the queue.
I think part of what I was going to say has been addressed. I do think that clarifying, as we are doing right now, the purpose of this group is very important. I also would just make one comment. I agree that as new challenges come up, given the use of ICANN, we do find ourselves having to create a new process. But I think it's very important, to the extent we can, to just make sure that there's a very good and agreed to understanding about the scope of this group. And I think we're certainly groping our way toward what we think the scope should be. It would be important to have that documented and put forward. And I also agree with Amadeo's perspective that we need to send six people, and some of them need to have strong legal background.
Okay, so as chair, I can see clarification from Paul Toomey on those points and get a posting to the council just to clarify that as is the scope of the group. My perception from what I've heard is if you consider something equivalent within the genus, so in the area of who is privacy, that before we have started the process of policy development via a task force, we've got a steering group to sort of work out what issues should we be looking at, are they feasible to be looking at some of these issues. So I would see perhaps this as being a bit like a pre-filter to decide whether it is even appropriate to carry out policy development on the recommendations of WIPO2. And as Amadeo has pointed out, it may well be that the legal advice in that working group might respond and say that, you know, it's outside of ICANN's mission or it's impossible to implement using the ICANN agreements. And so really even at the feasibility stage, before you even invest a lot of resources in a policy development process.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I think we probably should go ahead, though, and ask for the constituencies to identify their one member, right, so that's work in progress.
Yeah, well, certainly I can post the relevant board resolution to the list, which is in the board meeting at the 2nd of June this year. So at least, you know, that's a definitive start. But, yes, we would be seeking one representative from each constituency. And I guess taking on Amadeo's suggestion, I think what Amadeo's suggesting is that the constituencies give consideration to appointing people with a knowledge of the legal issues.
I don't think that all of them. The only problem of doing that the constituency way is that you may have with six people with exactly the same thing without general balance. But anyway, at least some of them should know not only tremor law, but also especially the UDRP process and the history of, you know, how this got into ICANN. Do you have any deadline for submitting the names, Bruce?
I've really just had a conversation with Paul a couple of hours ago, verbal. So Paul did not give me a deadline, no.
Okay, good.
I mean, I would assume that for working purposes, we're probably talking, 14 to 30-day period, and I can clarify that with Paul, but I certainly didn't sense that there was an urgency that it needs to be done any faster than that. So perhaps if I can propose a resolution from the chair and see if members would like to second it, but I propose that the GNSO request each constituency to nominate one person to represent the GNSO on the President's working group to deal with the WIPO2 recommendations. Do I have a
second
seconder for that motion?
Second.
Who was that, sir?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Sorry, who was that speaking?
Oh, that was me, Milton.
Milton, thank you. Okay. Any further discussion on that motion? Okay, all those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, motion passed. The next item of the agenda is the discussion of the staff manager's report on UDRP. This report was posted on the to the ICANN website on the 1st of August. I've gone through it, and I guess the summary of the report is that it lists a series of procedural issues. It defines the issue and provides some case in favour of an issue and some case against the issue. It then has a set of what are defined as substantive issues that do seem to quite often rely on the same sort of issue, I guess, that's been discussed earlier on the WIPO too, but whether ICANN should be making any determinants in how the law is applied when there are already quite a deal of differences between the national trademark laws. The report tries to summarise what the positions are of each of the GNSO constituencies. And then the report basically suggests that the areas that are substantive issues are most likely outside of ICANN's scope, and that the policy development process should be focused on those issues that are really to do with the sort of defined here as procedural issues of the UDRP process, and just to give a quick flavour of those procedural issues that are listed, there's issues such as should there be a central searchable access to panel decisions, should complainant and respondent filings be publicly available, should complainants and respondents be allowed to amend their filings, should the processes be modified to address concerns about potential of conflict of interest in the panel selection. Should there be standards for accrediting the providers and panellists? Should there be, should you be able to transfer proceedings between providers? Should there be refunds of providers' fees if there's a settlement? Should the period of time available for responding to a UDRP dispute be changed? Should the procedure for actually transferring a domain name between individuals as a result of the decision be amended, and should panel decisions be subject to internal review? So those are, I guess, a list of the issues that are described as procedural. The options for the council would be we could, as a council, decide that we do believe that we should embark on a policy development process. I think we're probably in a similar position as we were to the Who Is issues, in that this report basically lists many issues, and if we did that, we would probably need to form a group first to review which are the most urgent issues for work, and to develop a work program where we prioritise the work in the UDRP area. That's perhaps my quick summary of the report, and again, I invite others to comment at this stage on what they see as the next step, whether we should take no action, whether we should plan some action for some future date, or whether we should start action now to develop a policy development process around some of the issues raised.
Bruce, Carolyn, I'd like to be in the queue.
And
sorry, I've got Marilyn in the queue. Who's next?
Philip.
I'm available.
Jeff Newman.
Paula Horsley.
Okay, I've got Marilyn, Philip, Amadeo, Jeff, and Thomas Russell in the queue. Go ahead, Marilyn.
I would like to recommend that we do
a quick process of prioritization and establish the priorities agreed to broadly by the council, and then move ahead with a PDP which focuses on the prioritized, the agreed to prioritized areas. I think UDRP, when UDRP was instantiated, we intended to have an assessment of UDRP in a reasonable time frame, and I think that it behooves the council to move ahead with that.
Okay. Philip?
Yeah, I certainly support the general thrust of what Marilyn's saying, and I have one practical suggestion. If you looked at the five recommendations that come out of the bottom of the report, there are essentially four to do with possible changes in the process, but one is to do with enforcement of the existing process. And my recommendation would be that we initially engage ourselves on that fifth recommendation in terms of enforcement of the existing process, and then look separately at the prioritization of the other points. The first one struck me as the enforcement issue struck me as very similar, in fact, to the transfers and deletes issues, which we've been rather successful at getting resolutions.
Okay. Amadeo?
Okay. First, just a question for my clarification. Is Dan Halloran or anyone from the staff on the call?
Speak with Dan earlier today. It's 5 o'clock in the morning in California, and
he declined
to attend because he had young children. So that he is able to follow up any questions that we might have.
I understand that. Well, here I agree that we should do two things. I mean, there are so few procedural questions, and to the list of five, there is the question of the simple, withdrawal of the possibility to request a cancel, the cancellation of the name, which has created no good and many harms, especially historically with NAF, with National Arbitration Forum, and serves no good purpose, whatever. We could deal with that first, but I take exception to the staff report when it says that, procedural issues are within ICANN purpose and mission, but, any other substantial reform is outside. If ICANN is not the place to discuss and possibly modify UDRP, I don't know which other place we have for that. And quite frankly, I have a series of questions regarding policy that should also be taken into account, perhaps in a different and separate and subsequent PDP process. But I don't accept the characterization that's made in the report.
Okay, that's the separation of procedural versus substantive, is that?
I accept that for the purposes of speeding up the process, but what's said there somehow is that procedural issues are within the mission, but we should refrain from any other. No, perhaps we should, delay that because we don't have still a clear map, but I think it's also within our mission.
Yeah,
and some of them are important and urgent.
Some of those substantive issues are probably, I had the same feeling, like cancellation, for example, was an area of something that I thought would have been within ICANN's scope because it's directly related to domain registration. Jeff Newman?
Yeah, I think my question was just a clarification that we're recommending that these five issues, just these five, not all the ones that were mentioned at the beginning, but just these particular five be sent to a group to prioritize? That's the
No, I don't. Well, that's not my understanding of what people have said as a whole. Philip has certainly made a comment about starting with those five. I think Marilyn's comment was more general, saying a quick process of prioritisation, and I think that could incorporate each of the constituencies, perhaps looking at the whole list rather than just relying on the staff's
I think one of my comments then would be that before we do anything with any of these issues, ICANN needs to determine whether it's in the scope of ICANN. In other words, why go through a process of examining any of these if ICANN doesn't believe it's within their scope? I think that's kind of I think what they're saying is these five issues are within ICANN's scope, so we can look at it. The others probably are not. I want a definitive. I think we should get a definitive answer as to whether they're in the scope or not first, before commencing a process that looks at these other issues, which it probably will turn out that it's not within the scope, and therefore
well,
it can't be.
Yes, but somehow this is what's done with the staff report.
Did I get in
before
the
staff
report? It does include a section called Scope of ICANN Policy Development Process, and it isn't, as Amadeo pointed out, they've kind of done a very simple characterization and said that procedural issues are definitely in ICANN's scope. And then it says most of the substantive issues and some of the procedural issues would extend beyond ICANN's mission,
right,
without identifying the issues specifically that fall into one or the other category.
Exactly, but that's why I'm asking for them to give more guidance, because I found that completely inadequate to give any kind of guidance.
What I would suggest as a process, Jeff, would be first to get the constituencies to do their prioritisation of all of the issues. So, there's sort of probably about 20 issues here altogether. I haven't done an exact count, but, of that order. And out of those 20 issues, the process I've done in the Who Is privacy area is start with asking each group to identify their top five. And then if we can get some commonality out of the top five and maybe start with three, then I can be asking a much more specific question of the ICANN General Counsel, and I can say, well, these are the three top issues that the GNSO Council believes are important in terms of priority. Can you provide a clarification on that? Because I think that's a better use of the resource, I suppose, of the General Counsel rather than getting the General Counsel to go through all 20.
Sure. So is your recommendation then to establish some sort of time period, rather than establish a complete group, because we don't have to establish a working group, to basically establish a time period for constituents to submit comments on that issue of priority?
That's certainly one option we could use, yes. We wouldn't necessarily need to form a group. We could merely ask the constituencies to, each constituency to provide its ranked, or not even ranked, but the top, let's say we ask each constituency to list their top five issues from this report. And I can tabulate those through the assistance of the GNSO Secretariat. And then from there, perhaps at our next meeting, then we can say, well, these are the top issues, and then I can get some advice from the General Counsel.
Bruce, I would recommend that approach, but rather than setting up a group, I think that makes sense.
Bruce, this is Milton.
Okay.
I'd like to be in the queue wherever it is.
Okay, I'll list you after Thomas. Thomas Russell, you're next in the queue.
Thanks. Two remarks. First of all, I would probably endorse to have a group look at prioritization and spend a little thinking about and spend a little bit of time also thinking about the question what policy issues are within ICANN's scope and which may not be within ICANN's scope. I would think that there may be some profit from actually exchanging views in an open discussion over just exchanging written commands. That's the first remark. The second remark is with respect to the assessment that most of the substantive issues are outside ICANN's scope. Two of these issues, just to pick examples, are the question whether the policy should be amended with respect to protection for non-registered marks, which could, of course, be both on the side of having non-registered marks as a defense for the respondent and of having protection of non-registered marks owned by the complainant. The other one is the question whether the policy should provide guidance regarding confusing similarity. A third one would be the question of holding and use. And in all those cases, ICANN staff argued that national and local trademark laws vary with respect to the respective definitions, so harmonization would not be feasible or within ICANN's scope. I would certainly argue in each of these cases that it is always within ICANN's scope to narrow down the focus of the UDRP. That doesn't mean anything else but referring complicated questions questions for which no uniform standard can be found to the court. That is, in this case, assuming conservative policies on ICANN's side, which would avoid dealing with complicated cases in the UDRP, may actually provide more deference to local law than what we have today. And I do believe that this way, this kind of an outcome would certainly be within ICANN's scope. There would be more of a risk to overstep the mission when ICANN extends the applicability of the UDRP to dubious and more complicated cases. So I would argue that the GNSO should look very carefully at what kinds of questions are actually out of the scope, or whether it's not just a certain outcome of the policy process which may be out of ICANN's scope. So there is an open mind that's needed on some of these issues.
Yes, I think in some cases it was a bit of a cut and paste job with the
heads and stands. Yes, these three were a cut and paste job, obviously.
Thank you, Thomas. And what I would assume then is that the ALAC committee looking at the UDRP itself as a separate process?
We're not doing a whole lot of work of that, but we have persons with some expertise in it, and we would certainly be interested in participating in this and providing further input. Obviously, between the appearance of this issue's report and this conference call, were nearly enough to gather any further input.
Yeah, I guess it would certainly be useful for the ALAC itself to get some outreach to individual users, I guess is new to the time that a lot of this data was collected. The ALAC didn't exist at the time. Milton?
Okay, hello. I'm going to start by making some comments about scope, and then I want to address the issue of prioritization, just give you our sense of what are the priorities and what are not. With respect to scope, I think some kind of strange word game or political game is being played when things are declared as being out of ICANN's scope, when ICANN has in fact created these things. With respect to unregistered marks, for example, 20% of current UDRP decisions involve common law or unregistered marks, claims of such. So for the policy to be amended to provide guidance regarding that, to be declared out of scope is a rather strange thing. What we've done is we've created a policy. Arbitrators are applying it to unregistered marks based on a reading of the policy. I don't see how you can possibly say that it's out of scope for ICANN to clarify how they should apply the policy to unregistered marks. And the same is true of confusing similarity. We use the words in there. The arbitrators apply it, or the panelists apply it in inconsistent ways. So I'm not sure why it would be out of scope for us to further clarify how they should apply it. Now, with respect to priorities, going down to the five things that are recommended by the staff report, I just have trouble understanding why some of them are in there at all. For example, database access. I mean, I'm all for databases. I'm at a school of information studies. I've done work on databases for UDRP, but this is not a policy issue. Okay, this is a service, a function that the DNSO, may be nice to have that function. It may be nice to have it improved, but I don't see that as a policy issue. So I don't see what it's doing in that list. Whether the complainant and respondent's filings should be publicly available, I don't think that's a priority. I don't hear a lot of agitation about that. I was on the UDRP, the original one, the task force. That was not a major issue that anybody brought up that I'm aware of. Amending and supplementing filings is a significant issue. I'm not sure how high it is on the list of priorities, but it is something that needs to be addressed. Appeals is a very important issue, and it's far more substantive than anything else that we have discussed, I think. One thing that should be on the list that's missing is the review of accreditation, of accredited providers. ICANN has no clear standards for accrediting people, And it requires, you know, a provider could become completely corrupt and openly corrupt, and there's actually no defined procedure for ICANN to de-accredit them. Finally, I would say that we ought to be thinking about whether we could have some kind of meaningful penalty for reverse domain name hijacking. It would not have to be a monetary penalty. We don't have to have ICANN in the business of fining people, but some kind of procedural penalty that might be applied to future disputes could be considered. So that's just my take on the report.
Yeah. I guess my reading of the words I thought was interesting, that in the paragraph before the list of five issues, the text says, and the likelihood of achieving consensus. So in, I must admit, I took those five as being kind of the staff's view of the ones that were easiest to deal with, but that's not necessarily the right approach, in that what we should be doing is what are the most important from a you know, registrant or complainant point of view, and then try to resolve them. And in regards to database access, I think that's a category is, yes, you know, you can get a technical team together and come up with a way of doing searchable access, but, yeah, that's probably not the highest priority.
Bruce, Philip, I think I have to agree with you there and also support a lot of what Milton was saying, because one of my concerns is that there seem to be a number of things that were listed in the report which frankly are maybe, as we've said, are nice-to-haves or possible changes, but some of them aren't ones I've actually heard anybody calling for. I think we need to be careful that we only spend our time looking at things that actually at least some people want.
This is the Madeo.
Yeah, so,
well,
so I guess what I'm hearing from... Sorry, who was that?
Go ahead.
I was really just going to summarise the discussion I've heard so far, but what I'm hearing is that people are not satisfied with the particular prioritisation that the staff have used. That people are comfortable with a process where we do some prioritisation, but that prioritisation process should apply to the entire report. So that's both the ones categorised as procedural and the ones categorised as substantive. We should treat them both equally for the purposes of the prioritisation process. And then as a result of that prioritisation process, if we can identify the top two or three, we can then have a dialogue with the General Counsel just to understand in more depth what the limitations on ICANN scope might apply to those. Is that a sort of fair summary? Okay, I think someone was trying to speak.
This was Amadeo. What we were trying to say is that we should be quite close to start the PDP process on the, you know, urgent reforms and limited reforms to the procedure, but we should keep going the work on, you know, the substantive issues or some substantive issues that should also perhaps be amended.
Yes, I think that's fair. And I think picking up on what Philip said, we should be, as a whole council, picking the issues where there is the desire. And my quick way of measuring that is to say each constituency, go back in with your membership, work with them to identify what they believe is the top five issues, and then I can collate that from each constituency, and that is a method of identifying what the community believes is important. Okay, perhaps again I'll propose a procedural motion. And that motion is that the GNSO Council requests each of the constituencies to review the list of issues presented in the staff manager's report on UDRP to identify the top five issues from the report that the constituency believes are the highest priority for further policy development, and to do that by the next council meeting, so in other words in roughly 30 days' time, and that those constituency positions will be collated for us to then identify which issues appear to be most commonly requested by the constituencies. have a seconder for that proposal?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion on that proposal?
Call for the question.
Thank you. All those in favour, say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, that motion is passed. The next item in the agenda is an update on the Who Is Privacy Steering Group. I chaired a meeting of the steering group last week. The minutes of that steering group have been posted to the Who Is Steering Group list. I'm not sure. Glenn, has it been posted to the council as well?
No, but if you like, I'll post it to them.
Yeah, I think you perhaps post a link so people are aware of that. Essentially, that steering group went through a fairly similar process that we've just described. We, on the call, asked each member of the steering group to identify what they believed were their top five issues. And out of that, I guess the top three or so that came to the top there out of the Who Is Privacy was in the privacy issues number five, which relates to registrants not being aware of what the data is used for after it is collected. So many registrants aren't aware that there is in fact a public who is and that there's bulk who is and so on. The other one was that the present query-based systems for retrieving the who is are essentially subject to fairly easy data mining, and hence they have resulted in being used for marketing practices, etc., which was beyond the original intent of the who is. So those are the sort of issues that are coming up just in that verbal discussion. What I have requested then as an outcome of that steering group is again ask each of the constituencies to formally review that privacy report and formally report back on the constituency's top five positions, and I'll collate those and we'll use that then to guide the development of terms of reference for who is and privacy. Also related to that work, that there has also been a group that has looked at some of the longer term who is issues, and that's a group that's informally been chaired by Paul Toomey just to ensure coordination between the GAC and the GNSO and the regional internet registries and so forth. That group has requested one through the liaison from the IETF, John Clinton, that each of the constituencies review the current requirements for a possible replacement protocol for the WHOIS, and that possible replacement working or protocol group is called CRISP, and there's a set of requirements, and John Clinton has asked the constituencies and the GNSO to review those requirements and determine whether they would meet possible future requirements for WHOIS. The second thing is that there's also been a request for each constituency to consider the current data elements that are collected at time of registration and review whether all of those data elements should be mandatory as they are presently in the contracts. And Alec Wilson suggested that in addition to constituencies identifying which data elements should continue to be mandatory, identify what the consequences would be if a particular data element wasn't provided. So that was also an outcome from the Who Is Steering Group. So I guess the update is that GNSO is being asked to ask the constituencies input on the IETF requirements work for a future Who Is protocol. The constituencies are being asked to prioritise their top five Who Is privacy issues, and the constituencies are being asked to review the current mandatory data that is collected at time of registration and identify which bits should continue to be mandatory, and for those that are continued to be mandatory, what the consequence would be if they were not available. And that would then be shared with the other ICANN groups for possible future policy development. That's really a summary of the Who Is Privacy Steering Group work. Are there any comments or questions on that? Okay. The next item on the agenda is item 6, which is a discussion on council structure. The status of the current ICANN bylaws is that each constituency needs to appoint 2 new representatives on the GNSA Council to take office at the conclusion of the ICANN General Annual Meeting in 2003. It'll probably be sort of October timeframe. The ICANN bylaws also require review of the GNSO within 1 year of passing, I think, the transition article, which was 15th of December 2002. So that's what's currently in the bylaws. Members of the council have requested that the board reconsider the issue of whether 2 versus 3 representatives should be appointed. And we have had a motion presented via email to the council. I'm not sure who. Philip, would you like to present that motion as you've currently drafted it?
Yes, I would. I'd also provide an update. There was a motion, I think, to which my name, Ken Starbs, Ellen Shankman and Tony Harris had proposed, which was essentially asking for a change in the timetable. And it's saying to the board, look, don't make a change in the council that we think is wrong first and then do a review, but do review and see if a change is necessary. And that's the essence of the motion we're making. Having done some wording for a resolution, I noticed that Jeff Newman has provided an amendment which goes in the same direction. And I believe all of us are very happy to accept that amendment as a substantive motion and to go directly to that without further change to further consideration of the original.
Can I speak, Tony Harris? Yeah.
Yes.
I'd just like to add to what Philip said. There was a motion, I believe, from Marilyn Cade for additional wording modification in the actual resolution at the end of the message.
Okay. Yes, I saw that. Perhaps I'll just read what I saw on the list, at least last time I saw it. It says that the council requests the board to make 2 changes in its review timetable. The first one is to change the transition article to allow 3 representatives per constituency on the council until the end of the ICANN annual meeting in 2004. And the second one is to perform a review of the GNSO council around the June 2004 timeframe, which would include, among other aspects of the review, a recommendation regarding number of representatives per constituency. That's, I guess, the crux of the motion as I currently understand it.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, any further discussion on that motion, either before or against the motion?
This is Jeff, just a little comment. I saw Marilyn's additional language. I'm not sure. I don't really have it's more a philosophical question. It's how can we really make a recommendation as to the number of members when we've never really had 2 members? So we can't really compare it to anything. But, I mean, it's more a philosophical objection rather than a substantive one. So I just thought I'd bring that up.
Perhaps I should clarify what the intent of my recommended amendment was.
Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
Folks, I just wanted to be sure that there actually was an assessment, and the way it was written, I think we all intended that this would be one of the topics which was included in the assessment, but the resolution didn't specifically call for... right now, we don't know what the elements of the assessment will be based on. That's going to have to be developed. I would assume the council would suggest themselves what the elements of that evaluation should be. In a bottom-up process, which we are trying to ensure I can live under. So the language was merely intended to ensure that when the evaluation is done, that it includes an assessment of the number of representatives.
Can I make a friendly amendment then to that, just so the language is a little clearer? It would be including an assessment of the efficacy of the GNSO Council with three representatives. Including an assessment of the efficacy of the GNSO Council with three representatives. Rather than us making a recommendation.
Yeah, I'll just give you my sort of engineering perspective on what I think has happened. My view is that a change has been made in the structure of the council by appointing three new members to the council that are not affiliated with the constituency, and they were appointed by a nominating committee. And from an engineering point of view, I would first evaluate the impact of that change before making further changes. So it appears that the ICANN bylaws are making two changes that are happening fairly close to each other. We've had the three new council members appointed in June, and in October we'll be changing the representation from each constituency. First, I would be, if I was doing this from an engineering analysis point of view, I'd first allow some time for the first change to have an impact, and I think that's going to take more than a few months. I think you probably need to measure that over 12 months, because the new members of council would take time to have an impact, most likely. So my approach to this would be, from purely engineering analysis, make the first change, which was done in June, to add three new members of council, measure the effect of that in a year's time, and then decide whether you need to make a further change, which is to change from three to two representatives. So that's just an engineering analysis of the problem.
This is Amadeu. A couple of three quick things. First of all, let me say that I will abstain on this vote simply because I was voting in favor of the articles as a board member. I don't think, therefore, I should take part in this vote now. It's not that I am in love with ICANN reform, far from that, but, you know, if I voted that at that time, I was aware of this discussion, and nevertheless, I voted in favor, so I will not advise to change it now. Now on the material issue, I fail to understand any of the arguments for increased efficiency. For instance, we all know that increased efficiency is more a factor of small numbers than big numbers. Regarding representation, well, we cannot push that much. I mean, representation is seen from, you know, the bird's perspective. You look down and you see whether what you see is representative or not. I mean, it's diverse from a geographic point of view, for instance. It's not that each single election has to be completely representative of a full geographic diversity, because then we will, you know, go to impossible situations, requiring that for each single member being, you know, the most representative of every single geographic region, which is impossible. The third thing, and regarding what Bruce was saying now, I think it was Bruce, well, in October, what I know is that the constituencies have to reappoint the members. That is, they may decide to change or not, as for each election. There is no requirement that everybody leaves. There is no requirement that everybody stays. So the question that changing that now, I mean, sorry, that changing the rules in October would undermine the review. The reality is that the rules are what they are, and the council already got a delay of the question. We decided to delay that until October. What you're asking now is for a new delay. Well, that's fair. But the review of the DNSO was already done with three representatives for each constituency, and questions about the number and the need for those numbers were dealt with at that time. Correctly or not is a different question. Whether this is critical or not is a different question. But quite frankly, the most eloquent argument for having three representatives was provided yesterday by Tony Harris, asking Jeff, you know, if you are in favor, you will not decide, you will not need to decide who's leaving from your constituency next October. I think that gerrymandering the structure each 6 months for the needs of personal, you know, interest in being here or there is not a good solution for ICANN or the council. And that's all.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. Can I
I'd like to get in queue too, Tony Harris, since I've been named.
Sure. Go ahead, Marilyn.
First of all, I would question that there has been a review of council in the recent days, and I actually strongly object to the idea that there it has been an outside assessment of council. This is a bottom-up organization, and council itself should be engaged in a self-assessment and a self-review, and I think that that should be supported by council and will be supported by council. It's very easy from the outside to look at other people's roles and responsibilities and to apply one's own interpretation to them, and I think that that is a fallacy and should not be supported. I also think that council has been functioning very well and that that should be acknowledged. We have before us a resolution which seems to have broad support that indicates that the present functioning of three members per constituency, we now have three additional colleagues appointed by the nominating committee. I think that we should do what we can to keep this particular structure in place, to work together, and to have an assessment at an appropriate period in the future after this structure has been able to work together to try to achieve effective policy for the GNSO.
This is Milton. I'd like to get in the queue.
Thank you. Tony Harris?
Yes, I'd just like to say that I think some of these opinions overlook the fact that at least in the ISPCP we have day jobs. And it's not just a question of the constituency tells us what we have to do. On the contrary, we have to focus on these issues and brief our constituency. So having three people being able to do this from our constituency point of view is a definite advantage. And as far as geographic representation is concerned, in Latin America, even if I am an Anglo-Saxon by birth, as Amadeo has pointed out, I do have an Argentina passport, and I do live in Latin America, and Latin Americans feel very strongly about the issue of having a voice in the different organizations that function within ICANN. I'm sorry about that, but it's a fact of life. Okay.
Thanks, Tony. Milton?
Yes, I'm not sure why some members think this is so important. I'm really having trouble understanding that. I think I've made my perspectives clear on the list that in the first part, we see all the constituencies basically voting uniformly, and that the real issue is how the positions are determined, how representative they are, rather than how many people are actually on the council voting or participating. The other special element of this for us is that, as you may have noticed, we effectively have, at any given time, only one member or two members participating on the council. We have had tremendous difficulty getting people to commit the time and resources to go to meetings, to participate in meetings. We would prefer, for that reason, for the number to be reduced because we would identify two people who are completely and fully responsible rather than electing three people and having only one or two of them show up at a given moment. We are now restructured under a policy committee format, whereas many people can participate in monitoring policy issues without actually having to be council representatives, voting council representatives. So we don't see the problem there. I'm not hostile to this conservation of the old structure. I just don't understand why people want it. It seems to me that with the addition of the new nominating committee members, the size is getting unwieldy. There is a possibility that there would be new constituencies in the future, which would make it even more unwieldy. I just don't understand the gain in the sense of sharing the workload can be accomplished in other ways and representation can be accomplished in other ways. So I respectfully disagree from what appears to be majority position, and again, I don't think it's tremendously important either way, except that I see some efficiency gains by reducing the size of the council, but I don't think it threatens much in the way of representation.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak for or against the motion?
Just for the fair to suggest that we put the question, perhaps.
Okay. So just clarify the question then. Jeff proposed an amendment which was assessment of the efficacy of the GNSO council structure, I think, was it, or council representation?
The efficacy of the GNSO council with three representatives per constituency. Yeah.
Three reps per constituency. Is that amendment accepted by the proposers of the motion?
One clarifying question to the whole resolution as it stands includes the whereas clauses, or is it just going to be we're just voting on this resolution as you said it?
I think we're voting on the whereas clauses as drafted by Jeff.
Okay.
Yes, I must say, from a personal point of view, not being a lawyer, I never really read the whereas clauses. I just read the conclusion. But that is the motion that does include the whereas clauses. Okay, I'll put the motion then as it stands with the whereas clauses that have been circulated, which I think are mainly just stating factual situation, and then with the motion as amended by Jeff. Given that it does sound like there is a variety of opinions on this, I will formally call out your name, and if you can vote either for, against, or abstain, bearing in mind that for a motion to pass, it's based on the number of votes for the motion. So I'll start with Philip Shepherd.
Yes.
Marilyn Kay?
Yes.
Grant Forsyth?
Yes.
Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Kerry Carp?
Yes.
Jordan Buchanan?
Yes.
Tony Harris?
Yes.
And you're carrying the proxy. Are you carrying...
Tony Holmes, yes.
Okay.
He votes yes also.
Okay. Greg Root?
Yes.
Milton Mueller?
I vote no, and I abstain on behalf of John.
Gabrielle, not present. Ken Stubbs?
Yeah.
Tom Keller?
Yeah.
Lawrence?
Yes.
Linda Bush? Is Linda still on the line?
She said she might have to drop off.
Yeah, okay. Gwen, has Linda provided a proxy?
She's given her proxy to Laurence, yes. So Laurence has a proxy of Linda and Ellen.
I thought Linda was on the phone, I'm sorry. So yes for Linda and yes for Ellen.
Okay, thank you. Amadea, you're
abstaining.
Demi?
I abstain too.
And Alec?
Abstain.
Okay. I will vote in favour. Therefore, I think we've gotten six.
We have a large and nice majority.
21 votes in favour. So the motion is carried. Now, having carried that motion, then the question is, what do we do with it? And I think probably the best thing to do would be to schedule a joint teleconference with the board itself for us to put that recommendation and allow the board to ask questions.
But besides that, you have also to formally submit that because it's a request for an amendment. And you should do that. I mean, if there is an amendment, there should be a period for comments, I guess. So you better submit that formally as a request for amendment as soon as possible.
That's right, yeah.
Excuse me, this is Roger Cochetti. I just joined.
Thank you, Roger. Okay, well, I certainly will be submitting it formally, Amadeo, to the ICANN secretary, but I'm also just looking at a process so that there's at least perhaps some chance for discussion. So I'll liaise with Paul Toomey to see if it is sensible to have a joint teleconference at some point in the future on that topic. The next topic...
Bruce, just saying... Sorry, Bruce, just to say, Philip, I think certainly your idea to do the two things there is excellent, and I think a joint board conference would be a good way forward with that as well as the board submission. And also, just formally say, I have to leave the call now. I give my proxy to Marilyn if there are any other votes. Okay?
Okay, thank you, Philip.
Philip?
Mm-hmm.
And can I go to Grant if I'm not on, because I may drop off?
Of course. Send to Grant if not, Marilyn. Thanks.
Okay.
The next item is the Budget Committee report, and I've asked Roger to join us for this part of the call. I guess there are perhaps two components of this. One is a report on what the current state of the genocide budget is, and secondly, to deal with the issue of the transition costs from AFNIC to the ICANN, which has now taken over the functions of the website. So perhaps if we just deal with the first issue, Roger, if you could provide a general report on from the Budget Committee.
Yeah. Basically, you all may recall that the Council decided earlier this year that the budget for 03 would be a six-month budget, recognizing that in the ICANN budget they had planned to cover the costs of the GNSO beginning on July 1st, so that the dues assessments for the constituencies were based on six-month spending. And spending tracked pretty close to the budget until we came to the end of June. The Budget Committee met actually on the last day of June, sort of review the accounts and going forward. And the two principal expenses of the GNSO are for FISAT, which is the name of the firm that Glenn uses, and AFNIC, the operator of the website and the listserv services. At the end of June, neither AFNIC nor FISAT had any arrangements in place to provide services to ICANN, and as a result, there was no commitment for continued GNSO support at the time the Budget Committee met. The Budget Committee, as a result, agreed to cover the costs of both FISAT and AFNIC for the month of July if those costs were not covered by ICANN. We'll come back to that later, but that created the extra costs that that Bruce mentioned a moment ago. Other than those costs, I would say spending has been routine. The current balance in the GNSO account, putting aside the question of expenses for July, is about $26,700, $26,800, something like that, just about what we projected. And I think, as all of you recall, the original plan, which the Budget Committee has now developed a more detailed proposal for,
was that at the end of July or sometime, or at the end of June or sometime thereafter, as soon as the books could be closed, the funds, the balance of funds would be turned over to the GNSO for future administrative expenses, recognizing, however, that ICANN is now committed to cover the basic costs of the GNSO. So the Budget Committee has a number of recommendations at this point that are on the larger issue, not dealing with the July expenses, but on the larger issue. And Bruce, do you want to take them up now, or what do you want to do?
On the larger issue?
The larger issue of closing out the old accounts and forming a new account. And
yes, if you could go ahead with that, yes.
Okay, one of the issues... One of the issues that Bruce asked us to look into is what to do about the outstanding debts of constituencies that have not paid prior year's dues, because the operating principle of the DNSO and the GNSO, going back to the original budget resolutions, was there was no method for debt forgiveness. A constituency made use of its seat in the council, and thus it had a debt. It may not pay the dues, but the debt was never forgiven, so that no constituency ever officially subsidized another constituency, and every constituency had the same obligations as every other constituency. So there was a principle underlying it of no cross subsidy between, no official cross subsidy between constituencies. For that reason, the Budget Committee and the Council really have never been supportive of debt forgiveness. And yet the issue arises, especially in the new situation, does it really make sense to show continued debts from constituencies to that go back to the DNSO, and these debts are carried, by the way, on ICANN's books until we advise them that the debts have either been forgiven or terminated. What the Budget Committee recommends is something which is sort of a compromise or a halfway between the notion of debt forgiveness and the notion of sort of permanently carrying the debts on the books. The Budget Committee's recommendation is that once all of the expenses have been fully paid from up through June and a decision made to do whatever on the July expenses, at that point the books for the DNSO and the GNSO would be closed. And a new account would be established on the GNSO, and the new account would be for administrative and miscellaneous expenses, and the new account would be funded by a transfer of the balance from the old account into this new account, and the new account would be controlled by some new mechanism, either the chairman of the council, or the chairman and the vice chairman, or the staff, or a new administrative affairs committee, or something, but it would handle miscellaneous expenses. So there's a package of recommendations that the Budget Committee has for how to deal with the transfer of the funds and the issue of the debts. It is important then to recognize that if the council accepts this approach, the debts will not be officially forgiven. They will just be irrelevant and moot because the books will be closed, and they'll be closed in a condition of some constituencies in arrears and others up to date. So that's kind of a quick summary of the larger picture, and I can deal with the numbers in the next discussion when we talk about the July expenses. But suffice it to say that the balance in the GNSO account today would be $26,800 less whatever is approved for July expenses.
Okay, and Roger, are you seeking approval for the big picture, or is that a proposal for consideration at the next meeting?
I would hope that the council could approve the big picture plan
today. There's no urgency. It doesn't have to be done today. But the sooner the transfer to this new system is put in place, I think the more logical a situation we would have would be. And specifically then, the proposal consists of four items. Number one, that when all payments are made from the existing funds, that the old DNSO, GNSO accounts be closed. Number two, that with the closure of those accounts, that the Council Budget Committee be disbanded. Number three, that the balance of funds be transferred to a new account, a new GNSO administrative and miscellaneous account. And number four, that the council create some mechanism to handle all administrative matters, including the management of this $25,000, and whether that's a staff function or an officer function or a committee function, we don't have a recommendation, but that there be some new function. There's no need for a budget committee in this new environment. So those are the four elements of the proposal.
Okay. Well, I'll propose a motion that that the council accept those four elements, which is that when all payments are made from the old account, that the account be closed, that the budget committee then be disbanded, that the balance of funds be transferred to a new account, and that a procedure be established for the management of the funds in that new account. That new account is actually within ICANN itself, so it's not an independent entity. Do I have a seconder for that proposal?
I second. Greg Ruth here.
Thanks, Greg. Any discussion on that motion? Okay, I'll now put the motion. All those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, that motion is passed.
Thank you, Bruce. Let me clarify. Could just one point for the council's benefit people should be aware of, and that is in the old budget arrangement, there was an MOU between the DNSO and then later the GNSO and ICANN management. And that MOU is the instrument that authorized ICANN management to actually be the custodian of the money. ICANN management has indicated that it expects to continue to operate under that MOU for the administration of this new account, but they have not yet committed that they will do so. So I want to just make sure the record is clear that ICANN management is not yet committed to it, and we don't have to face this today. The transfer of funds from the closing of the old account and the transfer of funds into a new account probably won't take place for another week or so, but at the time that it does, there is a small possibility that ICANN management will not be willing to continue to administer the funds as they have in the past, at which point the council will have to find a new mechanism for the day-to-day sort of, you know, administration of those funds. That's different than deciding what to do with it. It's actually sort of, you know, keeping the bank account and writing the check. So for now, they expect to do it, but they have not made a final decision to do it.
Okay. Well, I will liaise with the ICANN president on that issue and get that clarified.
Yeah, I think that would make sense.
Okay. Now, the next issue relating to budget, I think I'd like to give an introduction, and that is the issue of the transition of the ICANN website. As Roger recorded, the expectation of the GNSO was that the budget administration for the management of the GNSO website would be managed by ICANN. ICANN made the choice to bring that function in-house. Previously, we had been using a provider in France to provide those services. ICANN made the decision to bring that function in-house and to manage it themselves. However, I was notified by the Gina So Secretariat at the time of the Montreal meetings, but the timetable for that transition was no longer feasible, and that the GNSO website would not be transferred by the 30th of June, and in fact didn't occur until mid-July. I made a decision to I spoke to Paul Toomey regarding the situation and said that it was my recommendation that we seek that the current provider in France continue to provide continuity of service for the extra couple of weeks in July that would be required before the website was transitioned. I had hoped that ICANN itself would take over that responsibility and formally write to that provider and request their services be provided. That never occurred. I instructed the GNSO Secretariat to verbally speak to the provider in France to ensure that that service was provided on the expectation that a letter would follow from ICANN. And so they provided those services in good faith, but a letter didn't arrive. I've since raised this issue with the ICANN president, and he's informed me that, presently there has been no formal communication with the French provider and that there was no budget allocated within ICANN's budget for that transition expense. So my recommendation is that we treat this as a transition expense under the funds of the GNSO, and in keeping with the good faith of the service that was provided by the French provider, that the council authorise this additional expense, which is $1,980 US dollars, that was provided by the French provider in July. So that's my proposal. Roger, did you want to add any further to that?
No, only to say the budget committee did, and its June 30th meeting also, AFNIC was represented at that meeting, and the budget committee passed a resolution indicating to confirming for AFNIC's benefit that if for any reason ICANN did not pay them for the July operations, that the budget committee authorized the payment to them anyway. Oddly, for some reason, AFNIC has never invoiced ICANN, and thus at the official level, ICANN has never refused to pay AFNIC because AFNIC's never sent them an invoice. I'm not sure that this really makes that much difference. I think there's clearly an obligation, ethical obligation by the GNSO to pay AFNIC, and I think your proposal is completely consistent with what the budget committee decided in June.
Okay. Are there any questions or discussions on the proposal that the GNSO Council authorise the payment to the French provider of $980 for the transition of the GNSO website to ICANN? Do I have a seconder for that motion?
I second the motion, Bruce.
Thank you, Ken. Any further discussion on the motion? Okay, all those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, I declare that motion passed. And Roger, if you could perhaps, I'm not quite sure what your communication mechanisms are here, but you would communicate that decision through to the ICANN staff to pay that invoice?
Yes, that's no problem. And one small footnote just for the council's benefit, there's one other area, a very small expense, that is authorized under the GNSO's MOU with ICANN management, and that is a bank fees will automatically be deducted from the balance. Every time there's an electronic funds transfer to AFNIC or fees at the bank involved charges fees, so there'll be minor expenses for that. With the payment of the AFNIC invoice and the remaining invoices and these small bank fees, I believe that the old GNSO account will be closed out before the end of August,
and assuming ICANN management agrees to operate under the old MOU and administer the funds, then you'll be in the new budgetary situation by September 1st. I think that does leave an issue for the council, which doesn't have to be addressed today, but should be addressed soon, and that is how the new account will be controlled, you know, the decision-making process for expenses on the new account.
Okay.
And the Budget Committee has no recommendation on that. It's simply recognized the funds could be administered by the chair, the funds could be administered by the chair and the vice chair, by the staff, by a new committee of an administrative affairs. Those are a number of options. But ICANN management did ask me to emphasize that ICANN did not commit to cover any costs that the council would like to incur, and that they will be sending a document to the council sort of outlining new budgetary procedures, but essentially the new budgetary arrangement is one in which there are areas of expense, which include 95% of everything that the GNSO has spent in the past, but areas of expense that ICANN will cover, and that if the council or any member of the council wants ICANN management to cover costs outside of those areas, then that has got to be submitted to ICANN management in advance so that they can figure out if they're budgeted for it or can cover the cost or whatever the case is. So there'll be a new procedure, but essentially they cover most of the things that have been covered by the GNSO, but if it's outside of that, then there's got to be a request submitted.
Okay, and I suspect a lot of these things will come down to staff resourcing at ICANN in that they've got a number of staff that they're appointing, and until they've done that, I think they'll find it hard to get these procedures in place.
Yeah, I'll send you a note on what they've told me so far, Bruce, and you can take it from there.
That would be appreciated. Thank you, Roger. And also, I'd just like to express the thanks of the GNSO Council for taking on the role of chair for the first half of this year of the Budget Committee. And perhaps it would be appropriate to formally propose a motion to thank Roger for chairing the Budget Committee. I'm not sure for how long. It's probably quite a while now, Roger, isn't it?
Longer than I care to remember, but yeah, it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, okay. And it has been done on a voluntary basis, and you've been very thorough. So I'd like just to propose a motion of thanks for Roger for his efforts as Budget Committee Chair in the past 2 years. Do I have a seconder for that?
I second that.
Thank you. All those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, motion passed. Thanks very much, Roger.
Thank you.
Sorry,
and
who seconded the motion?
Pardon me?
Sorry, who seconded the motion?
A similar accent, but from the other side of the Atlantic.
Yes, it's been hard to hear on the telephone line, yes.
Bruce, I will send you a notice when the transfer is ready to take place and let you know what I hear about ICANN's commitment to manage the new account.
Good. Thank you, Roger.
Okay. Good luck to you all.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep.
On the...
Bye-bye.
Thank you. The final item under other business is the issue that has been raised by Jeff Newman on the problems with introducing new TLDs. Jeff, you have presented a paper and there has been some discussion on the list. So in the remaining, I guess, 10 minutes, perhaps just open the floor if others want to provide some comment or input on that paper.
Well, I'd also like to, unfortunately, a lot of people dropped off, which kind of, what I'd like to do is I'd like to form a group within the council to try to explore ways on how we can do some outreach as recommended in that paper. I mean, that's the ultimate recommendation, is to form a group that has its first call as soon as next week to begin outreach.
I'll give you again an engineering comment, Jeff. When I read the paper, it reminds me very much of the Y2K problem. The Y2K problem from a technology point of view is that a lot of people had written software without taking into consideration that we were going from a year such as 1999 to a year 2000, and that not all systems had coded for effectively a four-digit number being 2000. In fact, they just coded the last two digits, which had been incrementing up from the beginning of the century before computers existed, and then suddenly it got up to 99 and then it was going to go back to zero, and that would cause a problem. And what basically had to happen then is that everyone had to go through their code and identify wherever they had explicitly coded a date and correct that code. And that's a very similar problem that we have here, that there is a lot of software in the overall internet that's both in providers and in user equipment and corporate networks. And that software in many cases has hard-coded effectively the structure of the top-level domain space at that time. And I suspect that many of some of the new country codes probably likewise have similar problems in that it hasn't been noticeable so much because a lot of those new country codes haven't got very large volumes of names. But it's a similar problem. And if you look at what happened with Y2K, there was a massive outreach, obviously, that a lot of government support, and some countries provided special tax benefits for companies to invest in making that change. So that's kind of an engineering perspective, and I think it is a very big issue of outreach and actually getting people to look at the software that they've got and upgrade it. So does that help at all, Jeff?
It helps to, you're clarifying the problem. I think that's a good analogy. I think time is of the essence to start getting this outreach, and that's why I'd be in favor of trying to form this group, and I think it would be imperative that each constituency send at least one representative to this group to begin outreach, because I think outreach begins with us and with ICANN.
I think what I would suggest probably in the case of Y2K, there was a fairly good problem statement that people understood, and perhaps before you do the outreach, that's what you first need, and almost perhaps the approach is that ICANN should publish an advisory like it's done in the past on other topics, but a well-worded advisory that then when you do the outreach you can point people to, I think would be helpful. And the other option is through the IETF, potentially having an informational RFC approved by the IETF, which is an RFC for information for the technical community, that raises some of those issues, may also be another option that you could consider doing.
So federally, that should be fairly simple to do.
Those are good suggestions. I think those are long-term. I think we can start in the, for example, there are many ISPs that are part of ICANN, and certainly organizations. I think an advisory is a good idea to start with to reach that membership, as well as the business and commercial interests, as well as the non-commercial users. I think everyone in this organization can help. It just, time is really of the essence, especially for some of these smaller TLDs that are that need this help.
Can I make a comment, Tony Harris? Yeah.
Yeah, Tony Harris, go ahead.
Yes, just for Jeffrey, next week we have all the ISP organizations in Latin America will be in Argentina for our international Internet Exchange meeting. And if you'd like to send me any comments you want, we can circulate this and discuss it with all these people.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I guess what we have now is that paper that's been sent out. I'm not sure what other comments we can get in a week.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm back on the call.
Okay, Marilyn.
Okay, we'll discuss the paper then.
Great. Yes, we're just talking about Jeff's paper, and Jeff was suggesting forming a group to look at how to provide outreach. I guess there's two steps to that. I have some comments on that paper that I can provide you, Jeff, within the next week, just to perhaps improve the technical definition of the problem. I'm not sure. Maybe others could contribute as well. And then what I'd say is we should request ICANN at least create an advisory as a sort of central reference point of the description of the problem. And then groups such as Tony, in his meetings with the Latin American ISPs, can formally present the problem and begin the process of raising awareness.
I'm sorry I was off during this discussion, but I would like to, I will provide some further comments, but I'd also like to suggest that there really are some lists that ISPs go to that an advisory can be posted on, but there's a significant amount of the infrastructure that is provided by, not by ISPs per se, but by large companies and corporations who host their own DNS servers. So I think we'll need to think about in this discussion how to reach beyond the traditional ISP list as well.
Yes, the analogy before you came on the line, Marilyn, that I used is essentially the same problem as the Y2K problem.
That's right.
And the Y2K problem is pretty much in every software that relates to computers, and pretty much the DNS now is basically in every computer. So
we do have, by the way, in the United States at least, some ISACs that we can that are related to security, where there are lists where major corporations who operate DNS servers, Yahoo, Microsoft, all of those folks do routinely check those lists. So I just haven't had time to comment on that, but I will provide some comments that might help to elaborate on some other places to go to reach those major players in the infrastructure of the Internet.
Yeah, so I think the first priority is to get some, I guess, well-defined problem text, and I can help Jeff on that a bit, and Marilyn, you could probably provide some AT&T resources perhaps to help with the actual technical definition.
Sure.
And then the second thing is providing assistance into what mailing lists and forums that we can rapidly get that notice into.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I'm sorry.
Just one point. I think that RFC idea was shared up may be a really good idea, and it's probably something two people could sit down together and prepare, because it would be an informational document anyway. The point why I'm emphasizing this is you need to have something you can point, well, let's say the diverse community of techies to, and the kind of heuristics which are probably causing the problems Jeff describes are things you will find, I haven't seen them, I have to admit, but these are the kinds of things you can probably find in some libraries, some code snippets floating around, stuff like that, and not just something to show to these people. It would maybe helpful to just have an informational RFC float around, just a two-page description of the problem and what not to do. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, we'll go in the same direction. In my personal experience, addressing this issue with ISPs is quite easy, because they do understand what DNS is. It probably has been just, overlooking that problem for some reason. But when it comes to application providers, large corporation networks, things become much more difficult. And here, what's the problem? What are the fixes? Where can you write to if you don't understand what's the problem? Sort of DNS primer for UTLDs, it's something that would be needed. By the way, we will need to do this exercise again with IPCs and many other issues, so we better get prepared to have some solid outreach to the relevant communities.
Yes. Okay, well, I think I'd like to end the call here,
Bruce, we've
come up to the...
Bruce, yeah? I'm sorry. I'd really like if we could come up with a defined action plan, at least timelines. I feel like there's some good ideas that were exchanged in this call. I think excellent ideas. I would hate for it to wait another month or so before we get back to it. So is there a way we can define a timeline and hopefully stick to it so that we can go forward?
Well, Jeff, maybe could I suggest maybe that you might draft out a timeline, a draft timeline, and submit it, and people could comment on it online?
I could certainly do that. So from what I hear, did we need some time for just some comments on the paper itself, which will be comments from at least Bruce and Marilyn, Tony, anyone to submit comments, and then the development of a final draft for ICANN to use as an advisory. I'm just trying to get exactly what these defined elements are.
I'm Carrie to speak, please.
Yep, go ahead, Carrie.
I certainly agree with you, Bruce, that this is a ubiquitous problem, and there's no way that we are simply going to expunge it with the best of will. However, it's probably also true that the further out in the periphery a source of the problem is, the less gross damage it's likely to do when compared to something closer to the center of things. So somehow addressing the largest operators, the largest systems where there's likely to be some sort of an algorithmic process that has to be adjusted, may end up being a higher yield thing than simply acquiescing to the fact that things can go wrong just any place and cause trouble any place.
Yeah, Carrie, I agree with that, but I think you may find that the problem is not as inherent in the ISPs as it may have originally, you may have originally perceived.
Oh, I agree with you, Marilyn. I believe
your
that...
Your train is temporarily disconnected. If you wish to hold while your call is reconnected, press 1. Thank you. Goodbye.
Hello?
Yeah.
Still on?
Yes, we still on.
Hi, Glenn, this is Alex, still on.
Carrie,
still
here.
Good.
Marilyn. Jeff? Did Bruce drop off?
Was Marilyn still here?
I'm here.
Okay, I agree with you, Marilyn, that I think that we're obscuring the problem by linking it to one single source. It is not it may be an ISP problem, but it is certainly not only an ISP problem. And by focusing, we're likely to be missing the real thing that we should be doing, which is why I suggest that if we're going to talk about what we might want to concentrate on, what we might want to attack first, is look as close to the center of everything as we can possibly get. The largest individual contributors to the difficulty are probably closer to ICANN than the guys way out in the periphery, and I'm just a little bit unsettled by the two extreme approaches that are being advocated here. The one being that it's an ISP problem, we need to talk with the ISPs, or that it is so ubiquitous that it's hard to envision being able to do anything truly useful.
Oh, Carrie, I'm sorry. I don't think that's what we're proposing. Let me summarize what I think we're proposing, and maybe I should have done that. I think what we're proposing is something like the following: getting quick comments in the next 2 weeks that would define the places where the problem may exist, and that I think we can turn comments around in probably like maybe a 7 to 10 day period, then do a written draft that people who are knowledgeable about this agree that the language is understandable, and then we should begin to do outreach to key groups like NANOG, other places where ISPs are prone to exchange information. In particular, right now, there's a fair amount of activity related to both viruses and spam, so ISPs are online right now. Notices posted there will get many of the ISPs, and it will get those major connectivity and corporations that I was referencing. And that will get probably 70% of the traffic or more that is transported.
Well, actually, what I would suggest is that we see if we can't get to the guys who operate the security advisories, a CERT advisory about the disruptive effect of non-cognizance of the expansion of TLD space gets everywhere.
It does, but I am not sure that I would agree with you that this rises to the level of, for instance, the worm problem we've just been dealing with.
I also agree with you there, but I wonder if one of the things we might not want to consider is figuring out how to convince these guys that this is worth their mentioning.
One of the things that I've been doing, Carrie, is raise it through the ICANN Security Committee. I mean, essentially what you need to do is get some credibility behind your statement.
And then once you've got some credibility behind your statement, then you certainly can go to groups such as CERT and others and say, you know, is this something that you would be prepared to put out?
So can't we factor that, carry into this next stage of work?
Yeah, what I'm essentially hoping is that we're going to have an awful lot of colors on our palette here and make sure that we leave no line of potential productivity unturned. Rather than having a terse document saying that this is the source of the problem, we start out by recognizing that this is going to be a many-fronted battle, which I suppose is just a variant of what Bruce has been saying.
Is everyone still on here?
Yeah, well, I'm still there. I got kicked off, I'm back on. But basically, I'm happy if you want to propose a timeline. I think I know what the steps are. The steps are, let's finalise the document. That's the first step. And the second step is to use all contacts that we at least have on the council to get the message out.
Okay.
Bruce, I think the only thing that I just want to confirm that we are in agreement that we will be asking to make this an ICANN advisory, so that it would also then it would also be posted on the ICANN website as well,
of course,
and other places where it would be posted.
Now, Bruce,
it's the root of the tree, effectively. It's the top of the tree, and you can pass the message around, but at least it's there, yes. And potentially also get the IETF. As I say, once we start getting a defined document, we might be able to get John Clenson to assist through the IAB and potentially get the IAB to take that text and put it into an informational format from an IETF point of view.
Now, I know that this is something that the Security Committee is already looking at. I just kind of wanted to try to formalize it with maybe asking the ICANN board maybe to set up a committee or something with the...
I think the overheads are getting too high, Jeff, because I don't think it's that difficult.
Well, I think what I want to do is coordinate the efforts with the Security Committee, with our efforts, because I know they're proceeding on a parallel path.
I think they're waiting for a document, basically, because I'm on the Security Committee.
Okay.
I can certainly...
The coherence and reliability of the one true route is eroded by this. So it ought to be quite high on the list of priorities of any organization that claims control over the whole thing, and that the whole thing is indeed a whole, to address issues like this.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not expecting to have any problem getting ICANN to issue an advisory, and I'm not expecting any problem getting the ICANN Security Committee to review that and give them the sign-off. I don't expect that to be a problem.
I think this will actually go fairly quickly, and keeping it very task-oriented will move it more quickly.
Well, I want to share your optimism, Marilyn, so we'll see how quickly it goes.
Wait, Jeff. I said getting the advisory out could go quickly. I didn't tell you that ISPs would move or business corporations would move quickly.
No, that I understand. It took me...
Okay, I think we're over time, so I think now's the time to end the call.
Good.
Jeff, if you'd like to sort of put out a timeline or keep us moving, you can act as the chair of this activity.
I will do what I can.
Yep.
Thanks, Bruce.
Okay, thank you for all attending.
Thank you.
Bye.